Hello, I'm Angela and welcome to this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News for the 24th of June 2026.
Hello and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by the sight loss charity Beacon. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. Once you've enabled the Talking Newspapers skill, all you need to do is play Talking Newspapers and ask for the Black Country Talking News. Our Talking News service is also available via the free Wireless for the Blind app. It can be found on the Beacon Centre website, www.beaconvision.org/talking-news. As a podcast via services such as Apple or Spotify, or as a free CD, simply contact Beacon Centre on 01902 880 111. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Reading for you this week, we have me, Angela, Peter, Mohammed, Helen, Mina, Simon, and TNF Soundings contributor Andrew. In this week's edition, we find out what's been happening at Beacon with the latest update from Helen and Mohammed. There's all the latest news from across the Black Country, with Armed Forces Day being celebrated across the region this weekend. With thanks to TNF Soundings, we hear some personal wartime memories of those who served. We hear from Mina, who has the forecast for the week ahead. You'll have to be sharp of mind, as with thanks to Quizmaster Andrew, we have another general knowledge quiz to challenge you to. Local news to start, though, with me, Angela and Peter.
More than 200 residents have been helped to access income they were missing out on, totalling nearly £1.4 million, by the council's new Boost project. Boost was launched at the start of the year by the City of Wolverhampton Council to increase income, opportunities and life chance for its residents. The Boost team has not only helped people access more money, but they've also saved them £64,468 in annual reduction on bills and expenditure. Boost is there to help everyone who might be missing out on what they're entitled to. It can help families ensure they can make work pay for them and help others take better control of their finances. The more control people have means they can become more independent, financially resilient, and are in a better position to manage unexpected costs. And now, Citizens Advice Dudley and Wolverhampton have joined as a key partner, delivering Boost to maximise the number of people who can be helped, transforming not just their finances, but their lives. Citizens Advice regularly supports people who are unaware of benefits, grants, or other forms of financial assistance they may be entitled to, meaning vital income often goes unclaimed. Leader of the Council, Councillor Stephen Simpkins, welcomed Citizens Advice bringing their expertise to help deliver Boost in the city. Boosting income can transform lives. It creates life opportunities and helps people thrive, not just survive. These figures for Boost so far show just how many of our residents are missing out on income they're entitled to have. Boost is there for everyone. People who work hard, people who've paid into the system for years, and people who just don't realise what they're entitled to have. It's our role to ensure we give everyone the right help to access this income and empower them to unlock their full financial potential. I'm so glad Citizens Advice have come on board with their wealth of expertise, and I encourage anyone who thinks they might be missing out on income to contact the friendly Boost team. That one act of reaching out for help could change their lives forever. Director of Services at Citizens Advice Dudley and Wolverhampton, Nikki Saunders, said, "At Citizens Advice, Dudley and Wolverhampton, we see firsthand the difference that accessing the right support can make to people's lives. Too often residents miss out on benefits and financial assistance simply because they are unaware of what they may be entitled to or find the process difficult to navigate. And that's why we're pleased to be part of the Boost Partnership. By combining our expertise with that of other local organisations, we can help more people access the support available to them, maximise their income and build greater financial resilience. Boost is about ensuring that no one misses out on the help they need, and we're proud to play our part in making that happen for Wolverhampton residents. If you want to join the residents who have accessed a total of £1,385,306 in increased income to date and saved on outgoings through a financial wellbeing assessment, then contact Boost now. Email an advisor. boost@wolverhampton.gov.uk. Boost is spelt B-O-O-S-T. Alternatively, call and talk to a friendly Boost advisor in complete confidence. 01902 553316. There's also help for anyone who has applied unsuccessfully for money they thought they're entitled to. The Boost appeals team can take a fresh look. Email wrs.benefitshelpline@wolverhampton.gov.uk or call 07966 292321. Anyone who prefers to have a private chat face-to-face, then our Boost team are in communities each week, so it's easy to pop in for a quick private chat. Check where they'll be and find out more at the following website: www.wolverhampton.gov.uk/cost-of-living-support/boost.
Now, money worries is just one example of stress that significantly impacts mental health, contributing to anxiety, depression, cognitive impairment, and strained relationships, while also creating cycles that worsen difficulties. This week, Monday the 22nd of June, marked International Father's Mental Health Day, an annual campaign dedicated to raising awareness of the mental health challenges faced by fathers, and highlighting the importance of recognising and supporting their mental health while helping to reduce stigma and promote understanding across families and communities. Organised by the International Father's Mental Health Day charity, the campaign takes place annually on the Monday following Father's Day in the UK. This year's theme is Strong Foundations, Dads Matter from Day One, and emphasises the vital role fathers play in family life from the earliest stages. Councillor Obadiah Ahmed, Cabinet Member for Health, Wellbeing and Community, said, "Becoming a father is a huge milestone, and while it can bring so much joy, it can also come with uncertainty and pressure. It's completely normal for new and expectant dads to experience a wide range of emotions. Looking after dad's mental health helps the whole family. If you're a dad and feeling overwhelmed or struggling, it's important to remember that you're not alone. There's a wide range of support available across Wolverhampton, and I'd encourage dads to use these local services and take that first step to get help whenever needed. Available support for dads across the city includes Wolverhampton's Fathers Group, a regular coffee morning offering a safe space to talk about fatherhood at Bingley Family Hub, Norfolk Road, WV30JE, on the last Saturday of every month, 10 a.m. to noon. Contact Dave on 07713 86 558 for more details. Dad's Hour, the Wolves Foundation, a peer support group for new, expectant and existing dads at Molyneux Stadium. For further information, contact Jade Sutton at wolves.co.uk. Togetherness, free online programme supporting parents and carers at every stage, available at www.togetherness.co.uk/MUL/Wolverhampton/using. Access code WOLVES1. Dadpad app, a free resource offering guidance on becoming a dad, with access to local support and services. Available from the App Store and Google Play, with printed versions also available locally. Best Start Family Hubs in Wolverhampton provide advice, support and activities for families across the city at Best Start Family Hubs. For further information, visit www.wolverhampton.gov.uk/health-and-social-care/children-social-care/best-start-family-hubs. And there's more parenting support information available on the City of Wolverhampton Council website too. Find out more about International Father's Mental Health Day at www.ifmhd.org.
Up next, we have the Beacon Update, brought to us by Mohammed.
Hey everyone, it's Mo from Beacon, and here's your latest update with everything that's been happening here at the charity. We've got plenty to tell you about this week, so let's get started. First of all, if you're looking for something exciting to do this weekend, why not come along and see us at the Dudley Group NHS Foundation Trust's Health and Wellbeing Carnival, taking place as part of Armed Forces Day celebrations at Hindley Hall on Sunday the 28th of June from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. The Health and Wellbeing Carnival marquee will be packed with information, support, advice and activities for all ages, bringing together a wide range of local organisations focused on healthcare and wellbeing. There will be free games, activities and even a raffle, with visitors who visit more than 5 stalls being entered into a prize draw to win a well-being voucher. It's completely free to attend, so do come along, say hello, and find out more about the support available across our local area and community. Staying with events, preparations for Beacon's Refashion Show, which takes place on Thursday the 9th of July. The evening promises a fantastic celebration of pre-loved fashion, sustainable style and community spirit, with Beacon's own volunteer models taking to the catwalk alongside guest models to showcase some incredible outfits from our various charity shops. And we're also looking for 3 young models aged between 5 and 12 to take part in the show. Successful applications will get the chance to choose their own outfits from our Sedgley shop before stepping on to the catwalk and showing off their style. If you know a young person who'd love to get involved, applications close on the 26th of June, so don't leave it too long. Tickets for the fashion show are available now and cost just £5, including a complimentary drink on arrival. Looking ahead to next month, Beacon will also be attending the Vision Zone event hosted by Optelec UK on Thursday the 16th of July, and it will be here at the Beacon Centre. The free event will bring together a range of organisations and charities supporting people with sight loss, offering the opportunity to learn more about services, support groups and the latest in all things assistive tech. Whether you're living with sight loss yourself, supporting a family member or a friend, or want to simply find out more, everyone is welcome and no booking is required for this free event, which is being hosted by Optelec and hosted here at the Beacon Centre, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton WV46AZ. A parking is also available outside the centre. members of the Lifestyle Centre enjoyed a fantastic afternoon of live music thanks to the Bali Beats. There was plenty of singing along, hand clapping and foot tapping as members enjoyed a selection of well-known favourites performed by the band. A huge thank you goes to the Bali Beats for giving their time to create such a memorable afternoon. Music really does have a wonderful way of bringing people together, doesn't it? We'd also like to say a huge thank you and farewell to occupational therapy students Bethany Lange and Veronica Lewandowska, who have recently completed a 7-week placement with us here at Beacon. Throughout their time with us, both students have shown tremendous enthusiasm, professionalism, and kindness while supporting our members and learning more about sight loss and the services we provide. We're delighted that they enjoyed their placements, and we are grateful for the contribution they have made during their time with us. Everyone at Beacon wishes them every success in their future careers. Now, with the summer sun shining and finally making an appearance, Beacon sight loss advisors are reminding people about the benefits of filter glasses. For many people living with sight loss, bright sunlight and glare can make everyday activities more difficult and uncomfortable. Filter glasses are designed to reduce glare, improve contrast, and make spending time outdoors more comfortable. If you'd like advice about whether filter glasses will help you, Beacon Sight Loss Advisor team can arrange an appointment to help find the right option for you and for your needs. We're also delighted to have recently attended the 50th anniversary celebrations of Black Country Mental Health. The event brought together organizations from across the voluntary and community sectors to celebrate the incredible impact Black Country Mental Health has made over the past 5 decades. It was a wonderful opportunity to reflect on the importance of partnership working and recognize the vital support available for people across our communities. Congratulations to everyone involved and reaching such a remarkable milestone. And finally, a quick look at this week's community activities. On Friday, the 26th of June, members will be visiting Bantick Park and Bantick House Museum. The day will include a gentle walk in the park, time to enjoy the surroundings, and the opportunity to explore the museum at a relaxed pace, with Beacon staff on hand to help and support. If you'd like to book a place, just contact the team at Beacon by calling 01902880111, or you can email Dan at dclark@beaconvision.org. Also to note, we will be attending a few events this weekend, including the Hindley Hall Under Fives, and we will also be at the Treacle Fair on Saturday the 27th, and as mentioned earlier, we'll be at the Armed Forces Celebration. That's it for this week's Beacon Update from me. Thanks for listening. Take care.
Thanks for that update, Mohammed. Next up, we have another block of local news.
You may recall how we recently brought news about the first phase of the Sedgley Beacon restoration project. Well, with thanks to further funding from UK Shared Prosperity Fund, work to restore and enhance the Grade 2 listed Sedgley Beacon Tower has reached a major milestone, with additional funding secured to begin a second stage of restoration. First phase of the project, funded through £120,000 from the UK Shared Prosperity Fund, UKSPF, and led by Dudley Council, was completed at the end of March. Improvements include extensive vegetation clearance to reveal the tower, landscaping works to enhance its surroundings, repairs to the stone perimeter wall, restoration of gate posts and metal gates, installation of new entrance gates, and a range of environmental enhancements designed to create a safer and more welcoming space. Following the success of the initial phase, Dudley Council has now secured a further £40,000 of funding, made possible by an agreed extension with the West Midlands Combined Authority. The second phase will see the reinstatement of the missing section of the tower's stone spiral staircase, which is a key step towards bringing the structure back into further use, and the works are expected to be completed by the end of June. Scaffolding is being erected around the full outer perimeter of the tower to enable the installation of new stone steps for the tower's internal restoration while providing safe access to the top of the structure for repair works. Sedgley Beacon is a Grade 2 listed sandstone tower and a designated geosite within the Black Country Global Geopark. The completed works mark a significant step towards safeguarding the structure and improving public access to the area. Councillor Paul Brady, Deputy Leader of Dudley Council, said, "Sedgley Beacon is a landmark structure that holds huge historic and cultural significance for the borough, as is demonstrated by featuring prominently in our coat of arms. I'm delighted that Phase 1 has been completed so successfully, with immediate improvements to the appearance and safety of the site. Securing additional funding to move into Phase 2 is also a fantastic result. These next works will help protect the structure for the future and bring us closer to our long-term ambition of enabling greater access to the tower." Councillor David Stanley, Chair of the Friends of Sedgley Beacon, said, "It's incredibly encouraging to see the progress that has already been made. The tower is now visible again and looking much more cared for, which has made a real difference. The next phase is particularly exciting as it focuses on restoring part of the tower itself, and reinstating the spiral staircase is an important step towards eventually being able to access the top again and enjoy the spectacular views from Beacon Hill. The project has been delivered in partnership with the Friends of Sedgley Beacon, West Midlands Police, South Staffs Water, and other key stakeholders."
Taking a leisurely walk back down from Beacon Tower towards the town centre now, where a week of free events is being held at Sedgley Library to mark 25 years since opening at the Ladies Walk site. The main celebration takes place on Monday the 29th of June at 11:30 a.m. when Deputy Mayor Councillor Adam Aston will make a short speech and cut the cake. There will be music from local choir, TG Singers, refreshments, and at 2 p.m. a quiz entitled 2001 A Library Odyssey. On Tuesday the 30th of June at 2 p.m. local historian John Homer will address the question, "Why the Black Country?" Whilst Flora and Fauna is the topic for a talk by Rob Earnshaw, Warden at Wren's Nest Nature Reserve, on Wednesday the 1st of July at 11 a.m. On Thursday the 2nd of July at 2 p.m, best-selling author Miranda Dickinson will chat about romance and mystery. And on Friday the 3rd of July at 2 p.m, Elaine Bulkley will run a reminiscence and creative writing session entitled Thanks for the Memory, Sedgley Library and Roundabout. Professor Black rounds the week off with a Music in Mythology children's event on Saturday the 4th of July at 11 a.m, when the Summer Reading Challenge will also be launched, and at 1:30 p.m, Professor Black explores famous cases of hysteria around the world. Everyone is welcome to pop into Sedgley Library for the cake cutting event on Monday the 29th of June, and booking is recommended for the other events, said Tracy Rollison, Library Manager. Operating under the Better brand GLL is the not-for-profit social enterprise that runs Sedgley and 12 other libraries on behalf of Dudley Council. Sedgley Library has been playing an important part in local community life for the last 25 years, said Stephanie Roden, GLL Partnership Manager for Dudley Libraries. I congratulate everyone involved in marking its 25th anniversary with such an interesting and diverse programme of activities. Councillor Damien Caulfield, Cabinet Member for Neighbourhoods, said, celebrating 25 years of Sedgley Library is a chance to reflect on how valued it is as part of everyday life in the local community. From inspiring a love of reading to bringing people together through events and activities, it continues to be a place people can rely on. It's fantastic to see this milestone marked with such a varied week of celebrations. Events can be booked in person at the library or by calling 01384 812 790. And staying with our region's libraries, where Dudley Writers' Festival is in full swing, with audiences already enjoying a fantastic programme of author talks, and there is still plenty more to come this June. The free festival, which runs throughout the month, has reached its halfway point, but residents still have the chance to enjoy a range of upcoming events featuring best-selling and award-winning authors. Events still to come include crime writer Joe Calhoun's appearance at Hell's Owen Library on the 24th of June. A sold-out event with best-selling author Gillian McAllister will take place at Stourbridge Library on the 25th of June. Later in the programme, film director, screenwriter and novelist Tim Sullivan will appear alongside best-selling crime writer Simon McCleave at Dudley Library on the 26th of June, before the festival concludes with fantasy author Mike Brooks at Briarley Hill Library on the 27th of June. The Dudley Writers Festival is now in its third year and brings together established and emerging authors from across the West Midlands and beyond, with events taking place in libraries across the borough throughout June. This is our third Dudley Writers Festival and it's bigger and better than ever, said Stephanie Roden, GLL Partnership Manager for Dudley Libraries. The programme features some brilliant established writers as well as debut authors who are already making their mark. Their stories will keep you on the edge of your seat, taking you to exciting imaginary worlds and introduce an amazing array of characters. Reading expands your mind, builds confidence and fuels creativity in a way that no other activity can. Most importantly, it can help you feel better too. Talks are free to attend, but spaces are limited and booking is essential. To reserve a seat, visit better.org.uk/Dudley Writers Fest. Now it's time to test your knowledge, as we have the quiz questions for this edition.
DNF soundings. Features from across the UK.
Hello, it's Andrew here, and we've got another quiz of 10 questions for you. So, very best of luck. Question 1. What is the world's largest ocean? Question 2. Who was the King of Great Britain during the American Revolutionary War? Question 3. Which major company was founded by Richard Branson and Nick Powell in 1970? Question 4. Structural, cyclical and frictional are three types of which economic concept? Question 5. Which animal appears on the logo for Lloyds Bank? Question 6. In which religion would you worship in a Gurdwara? My apologies if my pronunciation is not quite right there. Question 7. In most versions of the Old Testament of the Bible, the first four books whose names in English have the same last letter. What is it? Question 8. In Greek mythology, who was the wife of Zeus and goddess of women? Question 9. Which Japanese word literally translates in English as empty hand? And question 10. The Blue House is the official residence of the head of state of which Asian country? Well, that's all our questions for you. I'll be back a little later with some answers. Best of luck with that. Thank you.
DNF Soundings.
Cheers for those questions. I'll get my mind working on them. Up now, however, is another block of local news.
A Wolverhampton cleaner has been busy scrubbing dirty road signs across the Black Country and Staffordshire in his bid to tidy up our communities. Window King's Cleaning Services owner Danny Thornton, aged 40, has been on his road sign cleaning crusade for around 2 years in an attempt to spread awareness around taking care of our community and to make the roads a bit safer for those who use them. Around 2 years ago, Danny launched the One Clean at a Time scheme, an initiative that sees him pull over any time he sees a dirty sign to give it a free clean, leaving it spick and span. And the cleaner posts the videos to his social media pages, often with words of encouragement, encourage us all to take an active interest in the cleanliness of our community. Talking about the initiative, Danny said, "I've been doing it for around 2 years now through Window King's Cleaning Services. I started a community initiative called One Clean at a Time. When I'm out and about, if I come across a dirty road sign, I'll pull over and give it a good clean. Every sign clean helps to make our roads safer while also making our community look brighter, cleaner and more cared for." Over the two-year period, the King of Cleaners said he'd spruced up hundreds of road signs using his 15 years of cleaning experience to make the signs gleam as well. He said, "Over the past 2 years, I must have cleaned hundreds of road signs across Wolverhampton, Cannock and the surrounding areas. It started as just one road sign, but it's grown into a bit of a movement that our local people now support." Danny said he believes that even the smallest actions can lead to big changes. And if everyone did one small thing for their community, then we could all make a real difference. He said, "Community support is something I'm very passionate about. I believe in giving back whenever I can. Even the smallest actions can lead to big changes. If we do one small positive thing for our community, together we can make a real difference." Well, through the initiative and with the support of the public, the cleaner also raised more than £500 for the Alzheimer's Society, showing just what the community can do when we come together. And the cleaner regularly posts his cleaning initiative to his Window King's Cleaning Services page, asking everyone to get involved in his cleaning crusade. And from pristine white signage to some summer blooms now, as bedding plants across Dudley Borough are bursting into colour after Dudley Council reinstated its bedding plants programme earlier this year. Beds or planters are now in place at several locations, including Stevens Park, Quarry Bank, Mary Stevens Park, Starbridge, Stevens Park, Woolliscote, Himley Park, Coronation Gardens and Pensnet High Street. Wildflower seeds have also been planted around the borough, with a mix of annual, biannual and perennial flowers now coming into flower, and attracting pollinating insects. Areas include Seychy Boring, Milking Bank Island, Street Island, Mary Stevens Park Tea Gardens, and the beds at the front of the hall at Stevens Park Wooderscote. Councillor Damien Caulfield, Cabinet Member for Neighbourhoods, said, "With the sunny weather arriving over the last few weeks, we have really seen our beds and planters come into bloom. I'm particularly pleased to see some of the wildflowers starting to come up. We know these are popular with our residents and offer huge benefits to local wildlife."
Across the region to the rolling hills of the South Staffordshire countryside now, where the picturesque Hopney Green Wine Estate in Bobbington near Stourbridge is celebrating after hitting a weekly production figure of 25,000 bottles for the first time. As the industry celebrates English Wine Week this week from June the 20th to the 28th, the South Staffordshire Vineyard has revealed the milestone as one of the country's most established wine producers, with the figure highlighting the growing popularity of English wine and the ongoing benefit of a perfect summer last year. Production total reflects Hapney Green's award-winning range and its growing role as a trusted contract winemaking partner for vineyards across the UK. The estate provides bottling and production services for 100 vineyards across 28 counties, helping bring more English grapes to market. For Hapney Green owner Clive Vickers, the current production levels are further evidence of the progress being made across the English wine sector, which continues to win new customers and attract increasing recognition at home and abroad. English Wine Week is a fantastic opportunity to showcase the quality of wines being produced in this country and the progress the industry has made over recent years, said Clive. We're currently producing around 25,000 bottles every week, which demonstrates the growing appetite for English wine and the confidence consumers have in homegrown products. The estate is continuing to reap the rewards of the hot summer of 2025, with favourable growing conditions helping to produce high-quality fruit and contributing to another successful period for the business. Encouragingly, the outlook for the current season is equally positive. Having escaped the damaging spring frost that can impact vineyards, the vines are in excellent health and have responded well to recent warm weather. Last summer was perfect, but what's really exciting is seeing the vines right now, which have rarely looked better at this stage of the year, said Clive. We've avoided the frost issues that can affect vineyards in the spring, and the recent sunshine has been extremely beneficial. Everything is developing well, and we're optimistic about what lies ahead. The positive conditions come amid forecasts that the UK could experience another warm summer, a prospect that would be welcomed by wine producers across the country. As English Wine Week celebrates the achievements of vineyards nationwide, Hapney Green believes the future remains bright for the sector. English wine has come a long way in a relatively short space of time, said Clive. Consumers are increasingly recognising the quality being produced by vineyards across the country, and we're proud to be playing our part in that success story. Up now we have to hear what the weather has in store for us, brought to us, come rain or shine, by our own Sunny Mina.
Hi everyone, it's Mina here with your forecast for the week ahead. Wow, hasn't it been a glorious week? With wall-to-wall sunshine, temperatures have sweltered too, so it will be off some comfort to know that although things are expected to become a lot more unsettled again, temperatures will also cool off to something a little more comfortable too. UV levels shall reflect this and shall shift from the very high levels we have been experiencing over the past few days, down to high and medium in the early parts of next week, with sunshine and sunset times as follows. 4:50 a.m. for the sunrise and 9:35 p.m. for the sunset. As for the weather, Friday 26th of June is set to be the last of the settled period of summer sunshine, with plenty of sunshine settling in across the region. with a gentle southwesterly breeze still drifting in warmer air. Temperatures shall still remain high enough to keep things feeling really warm at 29 degrees. Moving into the weekend, and the unsettled weather shall begin to shuffle its way in, with long spells of drizzle and sunny intervals expected over both Saturday 27th and Sunday 28th of June, with slightly cooler air pushing in from the west. Temperatures shall be noticeably cooler, with a high at more pleasant 24 degrees across the region. And this is how it shall remain as we move into Monday and further into next week, with a mix of sunny spells and light rain throughout the day. A gentle westerly breeze shall continue to keep temperatures settled and pleasant at 23 degrees from Monday 29th of June to Thursday 2nd of July. So there we have it. Do take care, have a wonderful week, and enjoy the weather.
Next up, we have another block of local news. This year's Armed Forces Day is set to be a fantastic day of free entertainment for all the family to honour our armed forces and all that they do for our city and country. Armed Forces Day is on Saturday the 27th of June from 12 p.m. until 4 p.m. at West Park and will be packed with activities for people of all ages. The event includes live music, military themed activities, fairground rides, street food, motorcycle displays, a shooting range and more, with the Armed Forces Parade at 1 p.m. City of Wolverhampton's Mayor, Councillor Paul Singh, said Armed Forces Day is a key occasion in our civic calendar and gives us a valuable opportunity to come together as a city and acknowledge the commitment, bravery and service of our Armed Forces personnel, both past and present. Wolverhampton has a strong and enduring connection with the military community, and I encourage residents to join us in West Park for what promises to be an enjoyable and meaningful day of celebrations. Councillor Leader, Councillor Stephen Simpkins, added, "We are proud to host another vibrant Armed Forces Day in Wolverhampton, bringing residents of all ages together to celebrate and learn more about our armed forces. With the parade and a wide range of free activities on offer, it promises to be an enjoyable day for all, while giving people the opportunity to show their appreciation." For more information on Armed Forces Day 2026, visit www.armedforceswolves.co.uk.
And Armed Forces Day is also returning to Himley Hall and Park later this weekend with a packed programme of activity for all the family. The free event, organised by Dudley Council in association with Dewson Partnership Solutions, will take place on Sunday the 28th of June from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. in the grounds of the historic Himley Hall. Visitors can enjoy a wide range of entertainment and attractions throughout the day, including a vintage military vehicle display, fairground rides and Punch and Judy shows. In the park, there will be a vintage and craft market, along with a tea tent by Heavenly Baking, serving tea for the troops, while activities such as archery and a climbing wall will give people the chance to get involved. There will also be an opportunity to meet regular and reserve military units, as well as Army, Air and Sea cadets from across the region, giving visitors an insight into life in the armed forces. And one of the highlights of the day will be the presentation of HM Armed Forces veterans badges and service medals by the Mayor of Dudley, recognising the contribution of past and present service personnel. Councillor Pete Lowe, Mayor of Dudley, said, "Armed Forces Day is an important opportunity for us to come together as a borough to recognise and honour the dedication and sacrifice of the men and women who serve or have served in our armed forces. It is also a fantastic family day out with something for everyone to enjoy while learning more about the work of the armed forces and showing our support. The event takes place in the grounds of the Grade 2 listed Himley Hall and is the largest free Armed Forces Day event in the region, attracting thousands of visitors each year. The event is supported by SF Harrison Roofing, Pegasus, and Dewson Partnership Solutions. Parking will be at the reduced rate of £3.60 per car for the day, and there are no ATMs on site. Veterans who would like to take part in the badge presentation are asked to ensure they have applied for and received their badge before contacting the council to be included in the ceremony.
This month is also welcoming a new Armed Forces Hub at Wolverhampton Central Library, offering a welcoming space for serving personnel, veterans, reservists and their families. The Hub, which held its first drop-in session a couple of weeks ago, is delivered by Stepway CIO, working alongside the City of Wolverhampton Council and a wide range of local partners, bringing together local services, charities and community organisations in one place, making it easier for members of the armed forces community to get help, advice and support. Neil Binder from Stepway CIO said, "Too often veterans and families are passed from service to service and it can feel like hard work just figuring out where to start. What we try to do with the Armed Forces Hub is make things simpler for people. Through the Hub, we can have that first conversation, really understand what's going on, and then connect people directly into the right support. It's about working together properly, so people feel supported rather than signposted." The first meeting went very well. We met with a veteran who had recently set up a fitness company. He asked about connecting with other veterans and we were able to share details about some of the support available in Wolverhampton, including Banter and Brews and the Wolverhampton Armed Forces and Veterans Breakfast Club. We also had visitors from the Sanctuary Hub and Rethink, and discussed how they can support veterans, along with potential training they can deliver to their staff, on how best to work with veterans. We look forward to engaging with more veterans in the future and creating more collaborative working partnerships with organisations across the city. Councillor Craig Collingswood, Chair of the Wolverhampton Armed Forces Covenant Boards, added, "The Armed Forces Hub is about making sure that the people who serve our country and the families who stand alongside them know they have support here in Wolverhampton. People can access the Armed Forces Hub on the first Thursday of every month from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. at Central Library. For more information about the Armed Forces Covenant and the help and support that is available to members of the Armed Forces community in Wolverhampton, please visit Wolverhampton Armed Forces, www.armedforceswolves.com.
Now then, did you know that prior to any houses being built, a South Staffordshire village was formerly an RAF airfield? Sitting just on the western edge of Wolverhampton, it was perhaps always inevitable that Purton Airfield would be swallowed up by housing. A few of the road names give a nod to its former airfield use: Bigging Close, Manston Drive and so on are references to other more famous RAF bases. And while there are no great tales of wartime glory associated with RAF Purton, it does have a place in the social history of Wolverhampton, as post-war it housed the first arrivals of the Windrush generation as they came to seek jobs locally. Getting all those new homes built didn't come without an almighty battle. Sir Charles Mander, who owned most of the disused airfield, was refused planning permission by Sizedon Rural Council and Tettenhall Urban Council. One of the reasons given for turning him down has topical resonance today, as the site was within proposed greenbelt land. Sir Charles appealed against the refusal, with a planning inquiry starting in March 1969, although the idea of building there had been in the air since 1963, when the first applications for outlying planning permission had been made with proposals for thousands of houses. A rare black and white photo showing a general view of a snow-covered airfield in February 1969 displays an uncompromising sign on a closed wooden field gate that says, "Private property, strictly no trespassers, dogs not on leads, shot on sight." Sir Charles was victorious in his 1969 appeal, with the Minister of Housing, Kenneth Robinson, giving planning permission in September for what was described as a mini town. The affair did not end there, as local protesters tried to get Prime Minister Harold Wilson to intervene, but he refused to meet a residents' deputation, and Staffordshire County Council went to the High Court to try to get the minister's decision squashed. It was all to no avail. Well, RAF Purton had officially opened on August 28, 1941, and was placed in No. 70 Group, Army Cooperation Command. He was transferred to Flying Training Command on June 1, 1942, and that training would basically be its wartime role, serving as a satellite station for other local airfields, RAF Turnhill, RAF Shawbury, and RAF Wheaton Aston, and used by training aircraft such as Miles Magisters and Airspeed Oxfords. It was quickly closed after the war, and the RAF abandoned it altogether in July 1947, after which buildings there were used as a hostel for the displaced Poles and others. It was on June 23, 1948, that a group of seven Jamaicans, newly arrived on the Empire Windrush, came to stay at the hostel. All had served in the RAF in England during the war. Four were carpenters, one a car mechanic, one a tailor, and the other had agriculture experience. One of them told the Express and Star, "When we first arrived in Wolverhampton, there seemed some resentment on the part of the officials at the employment exchange. We want to assure them that just as some of us came over during the war to help in the fighting forces, so many of us want to come over now to help Britain's trade and economic recovery." While in the wake of the 1960s planning battles, Purton Airfield was sold to a development company in June 1972. The first houses were occupied within a couple of years, and by the mid-1980s, around 11,500 people were living there.
Now, the memories of those who served in the armed forces are more than stories. They are fragments of lived history, carried in the hearts of those who stood in the face of uncertainty. In the roar of engines, the crack of gunfire, and the long silences between orders, individuals forged bonds stronger than fear. These recollections of courage, loss, and fleeting moments of humanity offer us a glimpse into the resilience that war demands and the hope that endures, even in its darkest hours. With thanks to the Talking News Federation, we introduce some humorous, some sad, some mundane, but all intensely human personal wartime memories of those who served.
Introducing Episode 1,
Nancy Bailey.
was a member of the Women's Auxiliary Air Force, or WAF, during the Second World War. Established in 1939, WAF numbers exceeded 181,000 at the peak strength in 1943. At that point, it meant that nearly 16 out of every 100 RAF personnel were women. Nancy was born in 1924 in what is now Tameside, the eldest of five girls. She joined the Women's Auxiliary Air Force in 1941 at the age of just 17. After training, she took on a highly responsible role that involved managing wages, equipment counts, as well as maintaining accurate financial records. And her multiple postings took her the length and breadth of the United Kingdom. I was lucky enough to get the chance to have an extended chat with her recently and to hear some of her amazing wartime stories. There are moments remembered as exciting when, instead of a rail warrant to get you to your next posting, you got a lift in the back of a Lancaster bomber. And there are sad memories of young airmen losing their lives before their training was complete. I went to meet Nancy, along with her daughter, Catherine, recently, and before taking us back to Britain at War, I asked Nancy to tell us the date of her birthday and to share some memories of her family life before she joined up.
31st of January, 1924. I mean, I started school there when I was three. Yeah.
What was primary school like in the 1930s?
They were very happy. I mean, I can remember when it rained, if you were one of the favourites, you were allowed to take the plants outside so they could get the rain. I came top of the class quite often. So every time I came top of the class, she'd give me sixpence. And that was a fortune then.
How old were you when you left?
14. I worked at a hat manufacturing place in Denton, and then I left there and I went to another place where I sewed buttons on blouses. And then I went to work in a chemist shop, and from there I decided I wanted to go in the forces, and the Air Force in particular. Well, I had an uncle that was in the Air Force. I went to work in Ashton-under-Lyne, and then one day this young lady came in uniform, and she said, "We would like to sign you, really, to be in the ATS." So I thought, the ATS, no, I don't like that uniform. I thought, decided I'd go in the Air Force. I was 15 when the war started. Gloucester, Innsworth, it was called, and that was the place you went to get kitted out and things. And then after 5 days there, I went to Fleetwood, I think it was. Yeah, and I did 3 weeks training, and this was in November, and it was cold. And then you call them blackouts at the time. They had these navy blue knickers on the top. I can remember that. Then I was posted to Wales. I went to do the training in North Wales somewhere, learning different things, because I mean, it was just equipment accounts we did. And when people were issued with things, some things they had to sign for, some things they had to return when they finished with them. And then after the war, when they were coming back and this, they were supposed to return things like torches and, you know, things that they could really return. But most of them had lost them, you know, so I spent my time writing CWO on these things, certified written off, you know.
So they didn't ask for any money for them, I bet.
They were just lost, or, you know.
So every single item, the torch, would have a number on, I'm assuming.
Yes, when the war was over and people were coming back from, coming back from abroad, you know. And I remember one young man coming in the office one day, and because I was equipment accounts, we kept telling them I stayed on another year. And this young man came in one day and he says, "Who wants a banana?" Yes, I would have done.
So were you sort of keeping tabs of where the equipment was going?
Yes, yes, yes. We got all the paperwork and where it was coming from and who it was issued to and all this sort of thing, you know.
And of course, it was all paperwork, you know.
Absolutely. And then, of course, everything had to be filed. Sometimes when you were busy, there was a pile you had to go and file. Then after that, I was posted to Evanton. That was 30 miles north of Inverness. It was a lovely place. I really, you know, I was there quite a while. We had the married quarters because it was empty then apart from the Ralph. And we were billeted out, which was, we went to sleep, you know. From the office, one of these big wagons with the flaps at the back, and they used to take us, you know, one of those back to this billet we were in, and the billet belonged to Eleanor Roosevelt's cousin. And then after that, I went to a place called Bishop Briggs. That was Glasgow, and that was a balloon centre, you know. Still doing me equipment accounts, you know. I didn't work on the balloons. We used to go and see these plays and things that come on, and films as well. And then we went one day and I smoked. They had a cigarette holder about that length. I think it was part of a pipe. And my cigarette rolled out from underneath the seat. And I was on my hands and knees, you know, looking for my cigarette. After that, I was in one or two places in Scotland. Banff, I was out. That was near Aberdeen, yeah.
DNF Soundings.
Now, here come the quiz answers.
Hello, it's Andrew here again, and I've got some answers to those questions we posed with you earlier. So question one, I asked you about the world's largest ocean. Well, it is the Pacific Ocean. With an estimated area of 165 million square kilometres. Now, to put that into some kind of perspective, the United Kingdom has an area of about a quarter of a million square kilometres, Europe about 10 million square kilometres, and Asia about 44 million square kilometres. So Asia, Europe and the UK, if we added them all together, and even allowing for the fact that some of them include the other, we're still only on about one third of the size of the Pacific Ocean. The Atlantic is actually about half the size. And then the Indian is a bit smaller again. Any others aren't worth mentioning in this question. But Pacific was our answer for that one. Question two. I asked you about the King of Great Britain during the American Revolutionary War. Well, it was George III, also known as Mad King George. Born in 1738 and dying in 1820, he lived a really good long life for the period in which he lived. He was the king for 60 years during the American War happened while he was king. By the way, that's also known as the War for Independence. And that took place between 1775 and 1783, with the now famous Declaration of Independence from Great Britain being signed in 1776. Some say it was George that lost us the colonies. I think that argument could reign forever. But George III was our answer. Question three. Which major company was founded by Richard Branson and Nick Powell? Well, when it was first created, it was Virgin, now better known as Virgin Group. Way back in 1970, the two men formed a record shop. First just as mail order, and then a year later with a physical shop. They considered themselves virgins in business, hence the name. And Branson himself has described the V in the logo as an expressive tick representing their seal of approval. When you look into the company these days, they operate a wide range of businesses and in some cases just use their name in some form of licensing arrangement. So, for example, Virgin Money is actually operated entirely by Nationwide Building Society. while Virgin Hotels is 100% run and owned by Virgin Group. So just because Virgin's in the name doesn't mean that Virgin have got anything to do with it, other than no doubt making a few quid. Question four. So my apologies, this was about economics and types in a particular concept. So I asked you about structural, cyclical and frictional, and in what economic concept do they occur? Well, it's unemployment. Now, there are typically five types that can be listed. So frictional is short-term transitional unemployment, often occurring when people move between jobs or enter the workforce. Structural is more long-term, and it's often a fundamental mismatch between worker skills and employer requirements. That can often occur when technological advances or industry decline, so the loss of the mining industry or the introduction of AI is certainly making an impact on employment and unemployment. Cyclical is caused by a lack of demand during economic recession. So again, where employers are not looking for workforce and thereby drive up the unemployment numbers. The other two that we didn't ask about but are part of the list, classical is often when wages get forced up, maybe due to minimum wage laws or unions, and it results in an excess of labour supply. And then seasonal, well, where there's a lot of work at Christmas for certain industries that then disappears afterwards, or the tourist industry in summer. Those are examples of seasonal employment and therefore unemployment. Question five, I asked you about the animal on the logo for Lloyds Bank. Well, it's a horse, or, as many decide to tell us, it's a black horse. It was way back in 1884 when Lloyds absorbed the Lombard Street Bank of Barnett's Hawes & Co. and they adopted their black horse for their logo. But it can actually be traced further back to as early as 1677 when the horse was first used. But that's probably a question for another time. Question six, I asked you about the religion that would worship in a Gurdwara. Well, it's Sikhism. And the Gurdwara serves as a community centre. It hosts worship education. It will include a free volunteer-run kitchen called a langar. And that's available to all people regardless of their faith. And Gurdwaras are marked by the Nishan Sahib flag. The Golden Temple, located in Amritsar, Punjab, is the spiritual centre of Sikhism. And Akal Takht is the political centre, also in Amritsar. History tells us that the first Gurdwara was built by Guru Nanak in 1521 in Kartarpur. Question seven, I asked you about Bible books in the Old Testament. Well, the first four have the same last letter, and I asked you for the name of it. Well, it's the letter S. I'm sure you knew that. The four books being Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, and Numbers. When researching for the quiz, I found out that there are so many variations of Old Testaments and numbers of books within them. I just thought the Bible was the Bible. But Roman Catholics tend to have 46 books. Church of England, maybe 39. The original Hebrew version only had 22 or 24. And then the Eastern and Russian Orthodoxies, they have lots more books. So I'm not entirely sure what's going on there, but if you gave me the letter S, you're getting the point anyway. Question eight was all about Greek mythology and who was the wife of Zeus and the goddess of women. Well, the answer we wanted was Hera, queen of the Olympian gods in Greek mythology, and she ruled as the goddess of marriage, women, childbirth, and family. As the sister wife of Zeus and daughter of Titans Cronus and Rhea, she is a central, powerful figure known for her fierce, vengeful jealousy, particularly regarding Zeus's numerous infidelities. Her equivalent in Roman mythology was Juno. Question nine, I asked you which Japanese word literally translates as empty hand. It is karate. One of the martial arts with four major types being Shotokan, Goju Ryu, Wadu Ryu and Shito Ryu. Apologies for all those pronunciations, as I'm sure I've got them wrong. They all originate from the Okinawan roots but differ in emphasis. From Shotokan's powerful linear movements and deep stances to Goju Ryu's hard-soft blend and other differences between each of those variations. All of these styles form the foundation for many other karate variations, focusing on the core principles like the stance, the block, the punch, and the kicks, but then with their own unique technical flavours. Question 10, and our last question for this quiz. I asked you about the Blue House being the official residence of which Asian country's head of state? It is South Korea. And I'm going to pronounce this really badly, but Cheongwa-dae, literally Siam Tile Pavilion, and also known as the Blue House, is the executive office and residence of the President of South Korea. It's located in Seoul's Jongno District, directly behind the former palace. I'm not going to give the name of that because I've got no chance of getting that right for you. And it has served as the centre of the presidential administration and state receptions since 1948. Except there was a three-year period during the presidency of Yoon Suk Yeol between 2022 and 2025 when it was open as a museum and urban park. I can't tell you why that happened or whether it's reverted back to being the home of the president or not. But that completes our quiz for this time. I hope you did well. I hope you enjoyed it. And I look forward to speaking to you all very soon. Take care for now.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. Thank you for listening. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!